Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the audio press conference for the release of the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs' latest report, Intimate Partner Violence in Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer, and HIV-Affected Communities in the United States in 2011. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, October 10th, 2012. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Chai Dandasaraph. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning to those on the West Coast, and good afternoon for the rest of us. My name is Chai Dandasaraph, and I am the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs Coordinator for the New York City Anti-Violence Project. I would like to welcome you all to the audio press conference on the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs' latest report, Intimate Partner Violence in Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer, and HIV-Affected Communities in the United States in 2011. We thank you for joining us today on this critically important call. NCAVP is comprised of 46 locally based LGBTQ and HIV-affected specific anti-violence organizations and is coordinated by the New York City Anti-Violence Project. Local anti-violence programs provide advocacy, community education and organizing, and a variety of services and support to LGBTQ people impacted by violence, whether it is hate or bias motivated, sexual, intimate partner, HIV-related, or police violence, and too often, a combination of multiple forms of violence. NCAVP collected data concerning intimate partner violence within LGBTQH relationships from anti-violence programs in 22 states across the country for this 2011 Intimate Partner Violence Report. Last year, NCAVP implemented a new data collection strategy developed to capture as much individual data as possible in relation to intimate partner violence victims, survivors, and offenders. This individual or person-level data allows us to analyze trends in intimate partner violence in 2011, specifically what communities are most impacted by various forms of violence. This person-level data gives policymakers, first responders, and LGBTQH communities a comprehensive depiction of intimate partner violence as it affects our communities. The 2011 report found that gay men were disproportionately victims of homicide in 2011. All in total, 19 intimate partner violence homicides of LGBTQ and HIV-affected people were documented, the highest yearly total ever recorded and more than three times the number documented in 2010. In 2011, NCAVP programs received 3,930 reports of intimate partner violence, a decrease of 22.2% from 2010. This decrease was due to a substantial 42.7% decrease in reports from the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center, which lost funding and staff for their intimate partner violence programming, reducing the number of LGBTQH intimate partner violence survivors from whom they collected reports. Excluding Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center's reports, there was an 18.3% increase in reports of LGBTQH intimate partner violence nationwide. Additionally, LGBTQH people under 30, especially LGBTQ people of color under 30, were more likely to experience violence. Finally, more LGBTQH survivors were denied access to shelter in 2011 than in 2010. We have speakers today from across the country that can speak to the diversity of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and HIV-affected communities. Our first speaker, Gary Heath, from the Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization in Columbus, Ohio, will be followed by Sharon Staple from the New York City Anti-Violence Project in New York City, Sandia Luther from the Colorado Anti-Violence Program in Denver, Colorado, Tara Slavin from the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center in Los Angeles, California, and Lisa Gilmore from the Center on Halsted in Chicago, Illinois. The report is available online and can be accessed at http://avp.org/ncavp.htm. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Gary Heath, from the Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization in Columbus, Ohio.
Thanks, Chai. Hello, everyone. My name is Gary Heath, and I am the Domestic Violence Program Coordinator for BRAVO, Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization, and we are a statewide Ohio-based organization. What we know from the 2011 NCAVP Intimate Partner Violence Report is that gay men were disproportionately victims of homicide. Of the 19 homicide victims, 63% of intimate partner violence homicide victims were men, a significant shift from 2010, when close to 67% of LGBTQH homicide victims identified as women. NCAVP members frequently observe that gay men are some of the least likely LGBTQH survivors to access intimate partner violence programs and shelters due to many shelters' refusals to accept gay men. We also know that domestic violence shelters can be a life-saving resource for intimate partner violence survivors. NCAVP believes that the inability to gain access to domestic violence shelters may contribute to the disproportionate rates of intimate partner violence homicide among gay men. The NCAVP report also showed other disturbing findings about the experiences of LGBTQH men. Men were slightly more than two times as likely to be injured as a result of intimate partner violence compared to people who do not identify as men. Gay men are either experiencing more severe forms of intimate partner violence or are more likely to reach out to local NCAVP member programs because mainstream non-LGBTQH programs are ill-equipped or bar men from receiving services. The report also showed that more survivors in 2011, 61.6%, were turned away from shelter than in 2010, which was 44.6%. Access to domestic violence shelters can be critical for the safety of LGBTQH intimate partner survivors. In Ohio, the few domestic violence shelters that will house men are in rural communities, which can be an hour or more drive from the major cities and urban centers where many gay men reside. Transportation may be a barrier for those survivors, and alternatives such as homeless shelters are not always a safe option for gay men. Many men prefer living on the street or in their cars than entering a homeless shelter. In 2011, there was a slight decrease in survivors' ability to obtain protections, orders of protection. Survivors reported police misconduct in 14.6% of incidents involving police, an increase from 2010, which was 6.1%. Survivors who experienced courteous responses are more likely to see additional support for their experiences of intimate partner violence and encourage survivors that they know to seek support. From our experiences, gay men may be less likely to seek assistance, ask for help, see themselves as survivors or victims, and may not recognize certain types of violence as intimate partner violence. These survivors may assume that intimate partner violence does not occur in LGBTQH relationships or among men because our society largely views intimate partner violence as an issue that does not affect gay men. When gay men do seek support, they often seek support from friends and look to community support if available. This makes it all the more important that gay male survivors have access to support from medical providers, law enforcement, counselors, advocates, shelter providers, and other direct service providers. Our data tells us that it is critical for the safety of LGBTQH survivors that law enforcement and service providers receive training and technical assistance to increase cultural competence so they may better serve LGBTQH survivors, and that LGBTQH people have access to intimate partner violence services across the country. Thank you for your time. I would now like to introduce Sharon Staple from the New York City Anti-Violence Project.
Thank you, Gary. Hello, everyone. My name is Sharon Staple, and I am the Executive Director of the New York City Anti-Violence Project. 2011 saw the highest number of intimate partner violence reported homicides ever at 19, which was three times those homicides reported in 2010. The majority of these homicides, or 14 of the 19, were reported in regions where NCAVP member organizations are located or where we have long-term relationships with anti-violence organizations. The majority of the reported homicides occurred in the Northeast, with three homicides in Massachusetts, two in New York, one in New Jersey, one in Rhode Island, one in Vermont, and one in Washington, D.C. A substantial number of homicides occurred in the West, with three in Washington and two in California. Three homicides occurred in the South, all in Louisiana. The remaining homicides occurred in the Midwest, with one in Minnesota and one in Missouri. It is likely that the increase in reports of homicides are connected to the presence of LGBTQH-specific anti-violence programs, which are more likely to recognize the signs of intimate partner violence, which law enforcement may overlook, and more likely to be a resource for the family and friends of the homicide victim, bringing this information to the attention of the anti-violence programs and or to the first responders and the media. Many anti-violence programs conduct training with law enforcement, first responders, and direct service providers within their state or region to increase their understanding of LGBTQH intimate partner violence. Without training, these providers may mistakenly identify abusive partners as roommates or have trouble recognizing intimate partner violence in same-gender relationships. And this training can increase the accurate recognition of and reporting of LGBTQH intimate partner violence and homicides. This increased cultural competency may also increase reporting in general by survivors of intimate partner violence and allow these survivors to be connected to appropriate services and support when they need them. For example, here in New York, Camila Guzman was killed in August of 2011. While law enforcement initially investigated this homicide as motivated by hate violence, they eventually classified this as intimate partner violence. The New York City Anti-Violence Project learned that Camila knew the person accused of killing her from Camila's friends and family as we worked with them to hold a vigil in her name. The New York City Anti-Violence Project has conducted trainings with law enforcement, first responders, and direct service providers to increase their understanding of LGBTQH intimate partner violence for several years. Our experience shows us that these trainings can substantially improve the accuracy of law enforcement response, which was critical in the case of supporting the friends and family of Camila Guzman. In addition to trainings, anti-violence programs conduct outreach, community events, and public awareness campaigns that also increase the likelihood of individuals reporting these homicides to anti-violence programs and the media, accurately reporting these homicides. At the New York City Anti-Violence Project, our Real Talks discussion series assists LGBTQH community members to understand and recognize intimate partner violence in their own relationships and those of their friends. This increases the likelihood that people will seek services and can increase the accuracy of first responders' understanding of the warning signs of intimate partner violence homicide. This data from our report today shows that the consequences of intimate partner violence survivors not having access to culturally sensitive programs can be deadly, and demonstrates the need for increased funding and resources to anti-violence programs. Now I would like to introduce you to Sandhya Luther from the Colorado Anti-Violence Program in Denver, Colorado.
Ms. Luther's line has accidentally disconnected. We are attempting to reconnect her.
Great. I can actually fill in. For Sandhya, this is Chai Jindasurat, National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs Coordinator at the New York City Anti-Violence Project. And I would like to highlight two additional trends that we have noted, and that is reports from people of color experiencing intimate partner violence increased substantially from the previous year, from 58.3% of total reported incidents in 2010 to 66.8% in 2011. Of the 19 intimate partner violence homicide victims in 2010, 42.1% were identified as people of color. This disproportionate number continues to be a disturbing trend. LGBTQH youth and young adults were almost two times as likely to be injured as a result of intimate partner violence. In 2011, more than a third of the survivors were under the age of 30, 38.5% of total reports. This number is fairly consistent with reports in 2010, where 39.4% of survivors were under the age of 30. We can usually find the best violence prevention models within the communities that experience them the most, and LGBTQH youth and young adult leadership needs to be supported through policy and funding initiatives as they explore and highlight dynamic and creative ways of addressing and preventing violence within and against their communities. Prevention efforts amongst youth are most effective when they build youth leadership, ownership, and understanding of topics such as sexual health, body image, media literacy, healthy relationships, and pride in being LGBTQ. Programs for resilience, healing, and healthy communities are best created amongst youth when they themselves lead these initiatives. In Denver, for example, a small youth-led program like Branching Seeds of Resistance has shown incredible success in its models for building more resilient communities through the creative uses of media, art, culture, and organizing. We urge policymakers and funders to increase support for violence prevention programs, which would include initiatives to strengthen LGBTQH youth communities and communities of color. Now I would like to introduce Tara Slavin from the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center in Los Angeles, California, as our next speaker.
Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Tara Slavin. I'm the lead staff attorney and project manager of the Domestic Violence Legal Advocacy Project at the LA Gay and Lesbian Center. I'm also a member of the Governance Committee of the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs, as well as a policy representative in NCAVP's work on the Violence Against Women's Act reauthorization. At the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, we offer two domestic violence programs, Stop Partner Abuse Domestic Violence Program, also known as Stop DV, and the Domestic Violence Legal Advocacy Project, also known as DVLAP. Together, our two programs offer a broad array of services, including counseling, legal assistance, training for service providers, as well as one of the only court-approved batterer intervention programs in the country, focusing on batterers in same-gender relationships. In 2011, LA Gay and Lesbian Center documented 1,917 cases of domestic violence in the greater five-county Los Angeles area. This was a decrease of approximately 43% from last year's report, but we believe that this decrease has less to do with an actual reduction of domestic violence in greater LA, rather a combination of factors, including a reduction of two full-time staff positions in Stop DV as a result of funding decreases, a decrease in attendance at two large LGBT local pride festivals, and three programming changes within Domestic Violence Legal Advocacy Project, in which we made a concerted effort to increase the provision of holistic legal services with an emphasis on LGBT immigrant survivors and assistance with U visas. As a result of the increase in time of investment given to each individual client, we had a slight reduction in overall numbers. Based on our experiences working with LGBT survivors in Greater Los Angeles, in 2011, as in previous years, LGBT survivors continue to face significant challenges, including insufficient responses by law enforcement and mainstream social service providers, which includes a failure to arrest parties or dual arrest and mistreatment and denial of services. For all of the above reasons mentioned, this country needs to pass an LGBTQ Inclusive Violence Against Women Act that that will help ensure that all people experiencing intimate partner violence, including LGBTQ survivors, receive access to life-saving support and services. In fact, for the past 3 years, NCAVP has been the premier national LGBTQH organization working to ensure that an LGBT-inclusive VAWA is passed. In 2011, Congress extensively and publicly debated the inclusion of LGBTQ protections within VAWA, citing NCAVP's data exhaustively and resulting in a sharp increase in media reports and public conversations on LGBTQH intimate partner violence. Our data and tireless advocacy resulted in Senate Bill 1925, a VAWA reauthorization bill that is the first piece of federal legislation that includes non-discrimination provisions on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity to successfully pass through the Senate. Unfortunately, NCAVP's work is not done. On May 16, 2012, the House passed a bill without these protections, not just for LGBTQ survivors, but also for immigrant survivors, Native American survivors, and survivors from communities of color. As of the writing of this report, Congress must still reconcile these two bills in conference, and NCAVP remains committed to doing all we can to ensure that these LGBTQ provisions exist within the final bill and to ensure that LGBTQH communities will never again be left out of a national conversation on intimate partner violence. Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce Lisa Gilmore from the Center on Halstead in Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you, Tara. Hi, this is Lisa, and I serve as Director of Education and Victim Advocacy at Center on Halstead. I also serve as a member of the Governance Committee of NCAVP. The lack of access to appropriate and competent criminal legal system responses, safe shelter, and other supportive services results in increased exposure to harm and decreased safety for LGBTQH survivors of intimate partner violence. As Gary stated earlier in this call, our 2011 report indicates that LGBTQH men were about 2 times more likely to experience injuries when compared to the overall group, and the majority of intimate partner violence homicide victims reported in 2011 were LGBTQH men. Additionally, people of color under age 30 were almost 4 times more likely to report experiencing physical violence and were almost 2.5 times as likely to be injured as a result of intimate partner violence when compared to people who did not identify as people of color under age 30. The data reported to NCAVP in 2011 indicates that people of color under age 30 and men surviving intimate partner violence are in need of systemic responses that recognize the higher rates of more severe violence experienced by these survivors and that such systems act in relevant and competent ways to increase safety for these vulnerable and disproportionately impacted survivors. In the United States, it's generally expected that law enforcement has a role to play in responding to intimate partner violence, particularly when criminal acts occur, such as assaults and other violent acts. In the reports we received in 2011, wherein survivors reported police involvement in relation to intimate partner violence, police arrested survivors or both individuals in 28.4% of the incidents, which is a slight increase from 2010 when 21.9% of reported incidents resulted in arrest of a survivor or both individuals. Of those who interacted with the police in 2011, 11.5% reported that police attitudes were hostile, and 33.2% reported police attitudes were indifferent. When those charged with responding to violent and abusive acts do not do so appropriately, survivors do not continue to reach out for assistance, which can decrease future safety. The same decrease in safety can occur when LGBTQH survivors attempt to access safe shelter and other services in relation to the violence and abuse they are experiencing. People who identify as a gender other than woman are systematically excluded from domestic violence-specific emergency and longer-term housing options. For example, data analyzed for this 2011 report found that 61.6% of LGBTQH survivors who sought shelter were denied, as compared to 44.6% in 2010. Since domestic violence shelter services and policies by and large exclude people experiencing abuse who identify as men or transgender, those survivors are left vulnerable to severe abuse with few options for increased safety. For example, in Chicago, there is not one single domestic violence-specific emergency shelter bed available for any adult who identifies their gender as anything other than as a biological woman. This creates and sustains a system of survival that depends on survivors figuring out how to predict and navigate the abuse they are experiencing, or how to survive situations that are often equally unsafe for gay men and transgender and queer people, navigating the homeless shelter and services system, or relying on exposed public spaces like trains, buses, and waiting rooms for shelter. The systems in place to increase safety for those abused by intimate partners must be accountable to serving all victims and survivors. Now I would like to reintroduce Chai Jindasurat, NCAVP coordinator at the New York City Anti-Violence Project, who will speak briefly to the report's recommendations.
Thank you, Lisa. Again, my name is Chai Jindasurat, and I am the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs Coordinator at the New York City Anti-Violence Project. In our 2011 report, NCAVP makes specific recommendations to policymakers and funders to prevent, respond to, and end intimate partner violence within LGBTQH communities. This year, we are calling on Congress to pass an LGBTQ Inclusive Violence Against Women Act that protects survivors from service discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, and recognizes LGBTQ communities as underserved. We are calling on policymakers and funders to fund LGBTQH intimate partner violence prevention initiatives, particularly for youth and young adults, to support LGBTQH training and technical assistance programs to increase the cultural competency of all victim service providers, to increase local, state, and national funding to LGBTQH-specific anti-violence programs, particularly for survivor-led initiatives, and to increase research and documentation of LGBTQH intimate partner violence. Thank you so much to all of the speakers. Now I'd like to open this up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, via the phone lines, if you would like to register a question or a comment, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for our first question. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to register a question or a comment, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. And we have no questions at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, you can press the 1 followed by the 4 if you would like to register a question or a comment.
And if there are no questions, I would again like to invite our panelists to share anything else they would like to add before concluding our call. I would like to add that as a conclusion, LGBTQH intimate partner violence is a pervasive and deadly issue in our communities. Our report is a testament to the resiliency of survivors, NCAVP members working to address this violence every day, and is a tribute to those lives lost due to intimate partner violence. As NCAVP, we are calling on policymakers, funders, and community members to join our efforts to prevent, respond to, and end this violence in our communities. I thank you all for joining us on our call today. This concludes the press conference, Intimate Partner Violence in Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer, and HIV-Affected Communities in the United States in 2011. And again, it is available online at http://avp.org/ncavp.htm. You can also visit www.avp.org. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect all lines.